Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, this is Joseph Silverschweig coming to you from the Utah Podcast. It is just me today. Well, me and my son, but he's asleep and 3 months old, so he's probably not going to contribute too much. I'm just going to talk for a few minutes here about Utah football and then let you all get on your merry way. First order of business for us here is the ASU game. It was a nice comeback from the bye week, big win, tons of points. Something I'm seeing the Utes doing this year that they haven't done in years past is start out a game out of sorts and slow and not playing the way that we'd like to see them play and then turn it on later. They've done that twice against both Arizona schools this year and also against San Jose State, although they maybe don't count as much. Starting out really without their heads in the game and then turning it on and being dominant for two and a half, three quarters towards the end. The other really nice thing to see was the passing game livening up. I think we can all agree that Troy Williams needed a good game, get some confidence, get some energy back. And there's a ton of depth at wide receiver, and that was on display on Thursday night. And of course, if you're giving out game balls, you got to give out the game ball to Hunter Dimmick, who had an amazing game, set the Utah collegiate record for sacks in a game. I believe also for tackles for loss in a game. Utah had as many sacks on Thursday night as Notre Dame has had this entire season, or had that entire season. I don't know if they picked up a sack on Saturday or not. But it was just an amazing performance from everybody. If PETA had four, Dimmick had five. It was really nice to see Bradley and I get at it. He won a national award for that play. It was a beautiful play, USA football play of the week, something like that. He did a really nice job on that sack, and we're excited to see what he can do next. And it's nice to get an easy, comfy win. Also nice was 22 carries for Joe Williams. He's been a workhorse for the Utes, and that's great to see. But with the slate that we've got coming up and maybe some extra games to be played, it's going to be really nice to see Joe Williams maybe get some rest. And hopefully Utah's performing very well on Saturday, and he can get some rest against the Oregon Ducks as well. So if I were to give out a game ball, I think I'd have to give it to Hunter Dimmick, but Chase Hansen also deserves a nod. He had a big pick six, really kind of put the foot on the throat of the Sun Devils and brought an end to that game, and continues to be one of the very best strong safeties in the nation. Between him and Marcus Williams, I don't think you can argue that Utah has the best safety tandem in the nation. I see Pro Football Focus has both of them at or near the top of the list for throws into their coverage. And certainly Chase Hansen is leading a number of statistical categories, forcing fumbles and turnovers and all sorts of good stuff like that. So that's great to see. ASU was a wonderful game, and we hope for more of the same this week against what should be another overmatched Utah opponent. What we'd like to talk about most this week, I think, is the college football playoff, and that's approaching, and whether or not Utah has the ability, if it's even possible, for Utah to make its way into the playoff. And on Sunday, those odds looked a lot better than they do here after the playoff committee released their rankings. And I say that because the expectation, I think, from a lot of Ute fans was that Utah was going to slot in ahead of those Big 12 schools. We thought, hey, Oklahoma, you lose bad to Ohio State. You lose bad to Houston, who turns out not to be as good as everybody thought they were. And the only teams you've ever beaten are those Big 12 teams, which is fine, and then, you know, it's a decent conference, but you lose your out-of-conference games. It doesn't say much about your place in the national pecking order. The college football committee didn't really see things that way. They went ahead and they put both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State ahead of the Utes. And it's hard to see how, with as tough as Oklahoma and Oklahoma State schedules are, they play each other, and Oklahoma also plays West Virginia. It's hard to see how Utes are going to be able to push past those teams, even with a win over Washington in the playoff, because in the conference championship game, because there's going to be, one would imagine, a actual champion from the Big 12, and it seems that the playoff committee thinks more of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State as it is. Personally, I find, in particular, putting Oklahoma State ahead of the Utes baffling. Their losses are absolutely terrible. They lost to Baylor, which looked like a good loss at the beginning of the year, but has proven not to be. And then their other loss is to Central Michigan. I think that losing to Washington and Cal is a lot better than losing to Central Michigan and Oklahoma State and Baylor. So I was surprised and a little bit disappointed. My analysis of the committee's voting prior to last week, like yesterday evening, was that they really avoided the big biases in polling, which are recency bias where you're favoring teams that are winning recently. So, say for example, saying that USC is great because their losses were 6 and 7 weeks ago, that's recency bias. And then there's brand bias, which everybody who follows the AP is familiar with. We just sort of assume that a school like USC or Oklahoma or LSU is better than a school like, say, Utah or Colorado, because they've got that brand, even though the results on the field don't bear that out. So those biases have not had a place in the committee's analysis in the past, but they really do seem to. That strong Oklahoma brand seems to be worth something, and the recency of Utah's loss to Washington seems to be worth something, and that's frustrating. That's especially true with the next thing I want to talk about, which is Joe Williams and just how well he's been playing. But a few more thoughts on the playoffs. Utah has a path. A lot of these teams play each other. One of Ohio State and Michigan is going to lose. Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio State. At least two of those teams are going to lose enough that they're going to fall behind the Utes, and maybe three. I think everybody should be rooting for Michigan when they play Ohio State, because that'll knock Ohio State out of the running. Michigan can run through, win the Big Ten, and if Michigan wins the Big Ten, they'll kind of knock everybody else out. Nobody will talk about Penn State or Wisconsin anymore, and that pushes Utah ahead of them. And then you've got to hope for chaos in the Big 12. You've got to hope that somehow Baylor squeaks out an upset over Oklahoma to close out the season, or over West Virginia to close out the season. And I don't know about you, but I can't stomach rooting for Baylor. So, you know, go everybody else who plays them. I don't care what it does to Utah's chances. I'm not gonna cheer for that squad the way that, not only what's happened, but the way that the school is handled. I think it's universally agreed to be disgraceful. So there's a shot there. A lot of people are saying that you need Louisville or Clemson to lose, and I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that if Utah is in fifth place or sixth or seventh place and they're playing Washington, who's in fifth or sixth place, and they beat them, they're going to jump ahead of Louisville, assuming they don't play in the playoff, or if something crazy should happen and Louisville is winning the ACC, because Clemson has lost another game, they'll already be ahead of Clemson, I think. So it's really chaos in the Big 12. The conventional wisdom was that the Pac-12 was ahead of the Big 12. I think the Washington loss to USC has really detonated that logic, and we're going to need a lot to fall the Utes way. But it's awesome that here we are, 10 games into the season, 2 games left to go, and I'm talking to you guys about, can Utah make championship game? Well, yeah, all they got to do is win a couple of games. And can Utah make the playoff? I mean, to even be having this conversation and to be talking about our school in conjunction with Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, that's an awesome, awesome place to be. And, you know, a few years ago when the youth were 5-7, I felt a lot farther away than this. So it's a credit to the coaching staff there. Next thing I want to bring up is just how good Joe Williams has been. Since he came back, he's been in 4 games, and he has ranked in the top 10 rushing performances for that week. Every single week he's been back. And 1 week, the week against UCLA, he was the number one back in the country. He's also racked up a ton of touchdowns in that time, and has just generally performed as well as he could ask. And I think there's an argument to be made, given the kind of slim pickings the rest of the nation, that Joe Williams can maybe get himself an invite to New York for the Heisman ceremony if Utah wins the rest of their games. Joe Williams racks up another 1,000 yards, which is possible. He could get 400 against Oregon. He got 1,000 against Oregon if he just kept running the ball. They're so bad. And scores a lot of touchdowns. His touchdown total right now at 8 is pretty low. But if he can get that up to 16, 17 by the end of kind of regulation play, he's not going to win. Lamar Jackson's a lock. But there's a really good shot at that happening. So that's pretty exciting. Maybe a really good shot is taking it way too far, but there's a hope there, and I think that people should be talking about it a little bit more than they are, because he's been, last 4 weeks, he's been one of the best players in the nation, and he's pulverized, not just bad defense. UCLA continues to appear to be a very, very good defense, and he put up an unbelievable number of yards. If Brian were here, he'd tell me, because he's an O-line coach, he'd tell me it was all about the O-line, and he's not wrong. We've got 2 guards and a tackle who can pull. We've got healthy tight ends who get upfield and lay down great blocks, and just huge gaping holes opening up. And then Joe Williams is so fast, nobody can catch him once he's in the secondary. And it's absolutely, the O-line deserves a lot of credit, not just Garrett Bowles, although he's the best player on the line, but both guards and Barton and Nick Nowakowski, who's done a bang-up job as the fourth-string center, both snapping the ball and as a run blocker and pass protection. So hopefully that continues, and there is really no better place for that kind of success to continue than against the Oregon Ducks. They are such a bad football team. It's almost difficult to describe. I mean, we're used to the Oregon Ducks having an incredible offense and a defense that got some interceptions, maybe got some sacks. They didn't get 0 stops, but wasn't the best defense we'd ever seen. One of these high-scoring, crazy shootout kind of game teams that, and every game felt close, but you just couldn't keep up with the Ducks. If you think about a few years ago when Kendall Thompson blew out his knee at the beginning of the game, Travis Wilson had a great game, Utah scored a ton of points, but with Marcus Mariota in the shotgun, there was just no way to keep up. But this year, Oregon is a special kind of terrible. I think you can make a sound argument that they're one of the worst teams in the country. They've got a good offense. They've always got a good offense, but it's 22nd. And usually when you're talking about Oregon, you're talking about them as having a top 10 or top 5 offense that can really carry that defense. And then when you're talking about the defense, usually you're saying, well, there may be the middle of the road, 50, 60, 70 in the nation, something like that. They're not the worst defense anybody has ever seen. Defense is 107th in the nation. These numbers I'm using are ESPN's efficiency numbers, which are a pretty good overall idea of how they do. They're terrible against the run. They're terrible against the pass. They don't get turnovers. They don't get sacks. They don't do anything well. And everybody who plays them can score on them. And since their offense isn't perfect this year, it's just not enough. Like, it's hard for me to see a way that on the road Utah can lose this game. I'm looking over their schedule right now. They gave up 35 points to Nebraska, and that was their best defensive performance of the entire season. 52, 45, 54, 52, 70, 51, 49, 44, 53. And they give up half a hundred every single game. Unless you want to count 28 against UC Davis, but I don't think there's any sense in that. I think a lot of people are talking a lot about the kind of revenge factor. Utah took it to the Ducks hard. Last year, it was sort of a transcendent change the entire trajectory of the season for both teams last year, where the Ducks got completely exposed and the Utes were suddenly propelled into this totally different conversation that they haven't really left since. I mean, they lost a couple games down the stretch and fell out of contention, but they were up until the last couple weeks of the season. It was still Utah could win the Pac-12. And that hasn't changed this year. We had ESPN analysts picking the Utes, and you'd be very much in your right mind to say that they could win the next three games and win the Pac-12 outright this time. And I think they might practice a little harder, and they might try a little harder the Ducks because of the loss last year. And there's something to be said for that, because you watch these guys play and they're just not playing hard. They're not playing together. They're not trying. They're not doing the little things that every decent football team does. And that's where a lot of the bad stuff comes from. And some of that might get cleaned up just because they're going to have such an emphasis on effort and emphasis on energy. Because they are, no doubt, really frustrated and still stinging from that embarrassing loss to the Utes last year. But once the game starts, it's going to be our players versus their players, and all of the things that are true last week and were true last year about that defense are still true. The secondary is not fast enough. They don't cover well enough. The D-line isn't strong enough. The linebackers aren't where they're supposed to be. Utah's O-line is very, very good, and they're going to be knocking open huge holes left and right all over the field for Joe Williams. And I predict by the third quarter for Zach Boss and by the fourth quarter for I don't even know who, Troy McCormick or Devontae Henry Cole, I don't think this game's going to be close. And on defense, Utah plays sound defense. Oregon does have good running backs. They do have good O-line, and they're really good at getting to the edge, which has been a real problem for the Utes, particularly with the linebackers not necessarily playing up to their potential. Or they are playing up to their potential, and that's part of the problem, at least in the case of some of them. But I think that even with those advantages, with a true freshman quarterback and the way Utah disguises coverages, it's going to be very, very difficult to be more than a one-dimensional running team against Utes. And we can stop that. You can bring Chase Hansen down to assist the linebackers. He's almost a linebacker himself. He may be playing linebacker by the time he graduates from the U as he continues to put on weight. And he's a fierce tackler. He takes good angles. He's in the right place. So the limitations that we've seen with Sunia Tautuloi and Jackson Barton and Gabikulua Fatsonga should be mollified somewhat by the inability of Oregon to really be as much of a threat throwing the ball as they have been in the past. We should be able to stack the box and control that a little bit. Unlike, for example, in the Washington game where you had to give so much respect to that deep ball from Jake Browning that it was hard to sell out to protect the run. But I think Utah can really key in on Royce Freeman or whichever Oregon running back has the ball and make a difference that way. So normally we'd go around the table and we'd have all three of us say, hey, here's what the score is going to be. Here's the game ball, all this stuff. It's just me today. But I can still do that. I am going to say, you know, just for nostalgia's sake, I'm going to say 62 to 13 Utes. And game ball goes to Williams. We haven't given Marcus Williams a game ball in a while, and I bet he picks off this this true freshman quarterback a couple of times and has a great game. On offense, I think we're going to get surprised. I think it's going to be a wide receiver who puts together a great game. Raylon Singleton or Tim Patrick is going to just keep catching the ball and getting downfield. And there's just huge gaping holes in that Oregon secondary, and these guys are going to run for days once Troy Williams delivers down the ball. So that is my score prediction. That is what I've got going on here. I think it should be a pretty exciting week, and that's what I expect. The last thing that I want to kind of throw in here is to talk a little bit about your rooting interests going forward. Let me pull up Pac-12 schedule. We can talk about some of the games that have taken place in the Pac-25 and also in the Pac-12 and who it is that you fans should be rooting for in the weeks to come. You want these teams ahead of the Utes to lose it. I'm not worried about Louisville. I think if Utah wins out, they'll be ahead of Louisville at the end of the day. But it would be real nice if Houston would do everybody a favor and knock off the Cardinals. Of course, that does bump up Oklahoma's resume, but we're going to need them to lose another way anyway. You certainly want TCU to beat Oklahoma State. I think that's well within the range of possibility. Because Oklahoma State is such a volatile team, don't play any defense at all. They can score with the best of them, but they just don't play defense. And TCU's got a good coach and good players. You could root for Ohio State over Michigan, for Michigan State to beat Ohio State. But that's going to be a long night if that's where you want to go. Although that game is on at 10:00 in the morning, so give you something to watch while you're eating your Wheaties. Wisconsin, Purdue, that's not going to help anybody. You really want Colorado to beat Washington State. You want Washington State to lose their next two games. A win over Washington State does not have the same cachet as a win over Washington in the championship game, and you want that Colorado game to be huge. You want it to be two game day in Boulder, the whole thing, so everybody is watching that game so that when Utah blows them out by 21, it means something. Indiana's not beating Michigan, so there's just not a lot else to look at there. But those are your games outside of the Pac-12. Oklahoma and West Virginia are going at it, and it is hard to say who you should root for there. You need chaos. West Virginia is behind the Utes right now, but if they beat Oklahoma, they'll probably jump them. So it almost doesn't matter who wins that game. You just don't want it to be too pretty of a game or too big of a win for either of those two teams. In the Pac-12, you obviously root for the Utes. I root for Colorado. Stanford, California, shouldn't matter to anybody, although that's always a great game to watch. You need Washington to beat Arizona State. That's a no-brainer. But luckily, Washington is at home, and they're favored by 27. So UCLA could do Ute and Buff fans everywhere a favor and put the air out of the USC Trojans. That would be just fine with everyone. Of course, if both Utah and Colorado win their games next week, USC is totally eliminated from the championship, and there's no way in for them because they don't have a Pac-12 game next week. And then there's Arizona, Oregon State. I'm rooting for Oregon State because Arizona's terrible, and I like Oregon State coach more. Well, folks, that's everything I have for you. I've got a nostalgia win, 62-13 for the Utes, telling you who to root for. Joe Williams for Heisman, Hunter Dimmick for Heisman, sure, why not? And that's everything I got for you. You guys have a great day, and go